Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, September 12th. I'm Sigurd Björn, reporting for KMUT. In tonight's news, fires that have been plaguing Siskiyou County and surrounding areas appear to be on the wane. Humboldt County Transit Authority aims for zero emissions with hydrogen-powered buses. And the Ferndale Wildcats go feral in Fort Bragg. Stay tuned, these stories and more coming up. The Dillon Fire west of the Klamath River in northwest Siskiyou County has been active for 18 days now and stands at just under 12,000 acres, as it has for the past couple of days. Containment is still at 78%. For reference, the Dillon Fire was 10,300 acres and 21% contained a week ago. Because the fire's intensity has waned, the number of personnel working on the fire has dropped under 1,000, down from over 1,700 a week ago. The remaining personnel is focused on mop-up efforts, removing or extinguishing burning material and hotspots near control lines on the south and east sides of the fire. While on the west side of the fire, firefighters are exploring possibilities of directly attacking the uncontained part of the fire, which is located around the Coffee Can Creek drainage. To the northeast of the Dillon Fire, the Blue Fire has increased by only about 25 acres overnight to 3,650 acres and is 28% contained, according to a press release from the Forest Service today. Although it has grown by about 1,000 acres over a week, the spread of the fire has slowed down drastically. Here too, the number of personnel working on the fire have been reduced. We have 640 people right now, down by more than 100 people overnight, indicating that we may have seen the worst of the Blue Fire. The Log Fire to the east of Soames Bar is at just over 1,150 acres and is 0% contained. However, the fire's progression was drastically slowed down by an inch of rain earlier this week. Additionally, the fire has reached pre-existing burn scars, which is expected to slow down the progression even further. Air quality has been and is expected to remain good to moderate across the area. While the Dillon and Blue Fires are beginning to produce more smoke, smoke impact remains minimal. No significant air quality concerns are expected from those fires at present. Winds may carry some smoke into Orleans, Soames Bar, and especially Syed Valley. Light smoke from ongoing wildfires burning across the Pacific Northwest descended into Northern California last night. This will result in some locations seeing moderate air quality at times. Humboldt County's transit system is aiming for zero emissions with hydrogen-powered buses and has received a new permit for its new fueling station on V Street in Eureka. Daniel Mintz reports.
The Humboldt Transit Authority's $38 million state grant for a fleet of hydrogen-fueled buses includes associated infrastructure, and permits for fueling stations have gotten local approval. At its September 10th meeting, the Eureka Planning Commission unanimously approved a coastal development permit for the project located at the HTA facility on V Street in Eureka. It consists of two gas station-like hydrogen fuel pumps in the HTA's existing fueling island, a public fueling dispenser along First Street, an 18,000-gallon above-ground liquid hydrogen storage tank, a hydrogen gas compression and storage system, and a range of related site improvements. Senior planner Chris Lohefner described the HTA's new technology and how it will displace a building that's antique but not in a condition to be deemed historic.
In 2023, HTA was awarded a $38 million grant through the state's Transportation Agency's Transit and Intercity Rail Capital Program to support the transition to a zero-emission fleet by purchasing a bunch of hydrogen fuel cell electric buses and developing this project. One of the first project components is the demolition of the building at 104 W Street. It is an old building built in 1896 and highlighted in Eureka's Green Book, An Architectural View. Formerly a residence, the structure was converted into an office building in 1985 by Utility Tree Service. Due to the age of the building, a Cultural Resources Technical Report was produced in 2025, which describes substantial alterations over the years that has compromised the historical integrity of the building, essentially rendering it ineligible for local or national registries. The building also contains lead and asbestos, which will be removed during demolition.
The storage tank will provide fuel for HTA's new hydrogen fleet, which will consist of 10 to 15 new buses. Last spring, the first bus arrived and is in a testing phase. The rest will follow over the next 2 years. Lo Hefner described how the risks of hydrogen fuel storage have been analyzed.
A variety of potential hazards were analyzed, and risks to flooding and tsunami were shown to be insignificant. Similarly, projected sea level rise is not expected to have any negative impacts over the lifespan of the project, given the elevation of the site. And HTA is currently working on a broader master plan for their whole facility that will look at longer-term sea level rise vulnerability and adaptation strategies. With respect to hydrogen safety, the hydrogen fueling station will not create new sources of odors, explosion risks, or environmental contamination. Hydrogen is a non-toxic, odorless gas, liquid, and unlike gasoline or diesel, does not produce lingering vapors or liquid spills. It disperses rapidly in open air, making sustained accumulation highly unlikely. While hydrogen is indeed flammable, ignition requires a very narrow concentration range combined with an ignition source, conditions that are prevented by the safety designs, continuous monitoring, and automatic shutoff systems that will be implemented as part of this project.
The project team includes several local and non-local consulting companies and experts. Jerome Kiriazzi, an HTA planner and the project manager, said the team ranges from a large-scale consulting firm to those based at Cal Poly Humboldt and in Eureka.
The design builder for the hydrogen fueling station is a company, Linde Engineering North America. They're a very large multinational industrial gas supplier and engineering firm. And they have well over 100 years of experience in constructing not only hydrogen fueling stations, but industrial gas supply stations for a variety of different uses. Their equipment and engineering has been used in over almost half of the hydrogen fueling stations that are operating currently in California. So they have a lot of their equipment and expertise in the state currently operating as well. And then we also have the Schatz Energy Research Center at Cal Poly Humboldt. They have about 30 years of hydrogen experience, and they are our owner's engineer. We're very excited and lucky to have an entity like that in our own backyard. And we also have the Hydrogen Safety Panel. They're a nonprofit entity under the Pacific Northwest National Labs, and they have decades of experience reviewing specifically hydrogen fueling station projects, and they will be reviewing this project as well and making sure the design builder is doing the best that they can on the safety side of things.
Kiriazzi added that there is, quote, very low potential, but the potential for hydrogen gas to be inside a built environment. He said due to that, the project team includes LDA partners and the Eureka-based GHD engineers whose code compliance expertise will, quote, make sure the risk is very low on this project. The permit and the project's environmental review were approved with added conditions, including salvaging of the demolished building's old-growth redwood framing to the maximum extent possible. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
September is Suicide Prevention Month, and KMUD will be bringing you local reports on this vital subject next week. But in the meantime, we have this report from our news partners in Wyoming, where mental health advocates have been highlighting unique challenges for LGBTQ youth who experience mental health conditions more often than the rest of the population. Eric Galatas reports.
September is National Suicide Prevention Month, and LGBTQ youth in Wyoming and around the country are finding it harder to receive support because of a move by the Trump administration. In July, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration removed the Press 3 option from the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, which sent people to a hotline that specializes in supporting LGBTQ youth. Sarah McHale is CEO of Time Out Youth, which provides support for therapy and housing. She says there's already anxiety among young people about the Trump administration, and cutting the Press 3 option will only make matters worse.
They hear the person who leads this country cutting funding for something that is directly connected to saving their lives. So it continued to send the message of, we don't actually care if you exist or not.
The Trump administration says funding ran out for the specialized hotline. LGBTQ youth are twice as likely to experience a mental health condition compared to their peers, and the numbers are even higher for transgender youth. The Trevor Project had been contracting with the government on the 988 line for LGBTQ youth. They still operate a hotline at 866-488-7386. The Trans Lifeline also offers mental health support at 877-565-8860. McHale says she still refers people to 988, but cautions that the person on the other end of the line might not be affirming of their identity. She also notes that there's a misconception that LGBTQ people call lifelines to talk specifically about their identity, but that's not usually the case.
Far more often, what our young people tell us is it's just the implicit understanding of your lived experience. You don't have to explain why school feels difficult or you're struggling with your parent, because that person understands that your identity creates barriers for other people to try to relate to you.
McHale says Time Out Youth continues to center joy in the LGBTQ experience. She says young people's resilience gives her hope for the future.
That I can see young people being themselves even more in the face of this makes me feel really hopeful that young people are going to save us if our elders would just step back and let them.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Wyoming News Service.
On the subject of mental health, research has shown that the majority of incoming college freshmen plan to seek out mental health support from their new schools. Isabel Charlet brings us this report from Oregon.
More incoming college freshmen have received mental health support in the past and are planning to use campus resources to meet that need, according to new research. A poll by Timely Care finds 65% of students have been to therapy before starting college, and 83% expect campus mental health support. Carrie Hayes, the assistant director of well-being at Central Oregon Community College, says those numbers are not a surprise.
The 18-year-old, 19-year-old cohort that's coming in, they are able to discuss mental health among their peers and with adults in their lives in a more open manner than we have generally seen before.
She adds Central Oregon Community College is meeting the rising demand by partnering with a mental health agency to provide near constant access to services, both in person and virtually. There's been an uptick in the number of young people interested in therapy since 2020, explains Hayes. Information related to mental health is also more accessible now than in any previous generation, she adds, which has helped ease some of the stigma.
They also have, as we know, much greater access to the mental health providers via telehealth than we have seen before, especially in these rural areas.
The most common mental health struggles students are facing, says Hayes, are anxiety and depression, as well as the stress of transitioning from high school to college. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
Swinging back to California, but staying on the college theme, a new report finds that the four-year degree completion rate for community college students in the States is only 16%. Susan Potter reports.
Students who go to a community college right out of high school graduate with a four-year degree just 16% of the time within 8 years of starting classes, according to a new analysis from the Public Policy Institute of California. The data show that students who start out in the UC or CSU system fare much better, with a completion rate of 72%. PPIC researcher Hans Johnson says income level and college readiness are big factors.
In general, what we found was that high school districts that serve more high-income families and those that have a relatively high share of Asian students have higher college-going and college completion rates.
The data comes from a new state online dashboard established this spring called the Cradle to Career Dataset, which tracks students over time. Higher ed has been working to improve transfer rates for years. For example, the Cal State system has begun offering dual admission, where students are admitted with a requirement that they first complete 2 years at a community college. And California waives tuition for the first 2 years of community college for recent high school graduates. Still, Marcelo Cabral, an academic counselor at El Camino College in Torrance, says higher ed will need a lot more funding so students can afford to attend full-time and colleges can provide proper guidance.
80% of students who are attending a community college need to have financial aid. 80% of the students have never done any career exploration, so we need a lot more financial aid and counselors, both academic and career counselors.
Cabral notes that college readiness remains a problem since many California high school students still graduate with only basic reading and math skills and then struggle to complete college-level courses. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Before we switch over to local sports, we have a couple of more short reports from different parts of the state. The first one is about a festival in the city of Long Beach in Southern California. Westside Fest is not only meant to entertain, but also highlight the city's progress in fighting pollution in the neighborhoods by one of the busiest ports in the country. Susan Potter again.
A festival set for tomorrow in Long Beach will showcase the city's efforts to improve the quality of life in the Westside neighborhood, surrounded by heavy industry and the port. The Westside Fest will have music and food, but also speakers and booths to highlight the progress made so far in the city's Westside Promise Initiative, which started 2 years ago. Paul Barragan-Monge with the Long Beach Mayor's Office says the fight to improve air quality and slow climate change is more important than ever, especially in frontline communities.
In the context of a federal administration that has really retreated in terms of its commitment to environmental justice, the onus is really on local government and local communities to take leadership in advancing public health-focused environmental policy.
Long Beach is working with the port, nearby cities, and others to move the port toward zero-emission technologies, and it is working to decommission an aging freeway to reduce the vehicle exhaust polluting nearby streets. Sean Bernhoft, chief of staff to the vice mayor, says improving the urban tree canopy is another goal.
Through the Westside Promise, the city has made a commitment to improving urban forestry through tree plantings across the city, including $100,000 from Long Beach Container Terminal and $100,000 in this year's budget.
Nikki Amick with the city's Community Development Department says Long Beach wants to empower people to make a difference.
The Love Your Block program is one way that the city is helping engage residents around climate action. So it will issue mini grants for community-led projects focused on transportation efficiency and clean air.
A health assessment by the city of Long Beach in 2019 found the Westside community suffers higher rates of asthma and cardiovascular disease, and life expectancy there is cut by up to 8 years compared to the county average.
Susan Potter, the hardest working woman in the news business, isn't quite done with us, because here she is with a report on a bill being considered in the California legislature to prohibit certain types of online gaming, such as free poker games, free being very much inside quotation marks.
A bill to prohibit certain kinds of social online gaming in California is expected to get a vote this week. Assembly Bill 831 would make it illegal to offer games like online poker that have a sweepstakes element, meaning the game is always free, but you can buy tokens to extend play. Many large tribes with casinos, like the San Manuel Nation, support the bill and call the games unregulated online gambling. But Eric Wright with the Quetzaldihi-Wintun Nation, a small rural tribe north of Sacramento, says the games are a mainstream, legal form of entertainment.
AB 831 is not about consumer protection. It's about protecting the market share of a few wealthy gaming tribes at the expense of smaller non-gaming tribes. Digital commerce, like legal sweepstakes, is one of a few viable economic paths we have. This bill would close that door entirely on us.
The Quetzaldihi-Wintun Nation has a partnership with Virtual Gaming World, which runs a well-known social gaming site called Chumba Casino. They are a member of the Social Gaming Leadership Alliance, which represents companies in the online social gaming space, and opposes the bill. SGLA Executive Director Jeff Duncan says the industry has safeguards to thwart money laundering and make sure children can't log in to play.
The companies that are involved at SGLA truly want to operate in a very transparent, regulated, licensed space and also pay taxes. There's an opportunity for California to receive significant revenue if it's legalized, regulated, and taxed.
Duncan estimates that social gaming brings in more than $11 billion a year nationally. It generates about $1 billion in economic activity in California and could generate $200 to $300 million a year in revenue for the state if it were to be taxed. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
It's time now for Ray Hamill and his sports report, which kicks off with that story about the Ferndale Wildcats, which we teased at the top of the news.
The Ferndale Wildcats kicked off their season in football in dominating fashion last weekend, rolling to a 57-0 win at Fort Bragg on what was another busy weekend for the local high school teams. Hello and welcome to this week's K-Mud News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on the Wildcats' impressive start in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including all the latest high school football news, some College of the Redwoods football, some high school soccer, and why this is a big week for one Cal Poly Humboldt team in particular. But first up, it was a nice start to the new football season for the Ferndale Wildcats, who lived up to expectations in their season opener against the Timberwolves. The Cats, who are considered one of the best teams in the area this year, traveled to Fort Bragg and dominated in all aspects of the game, scoring 9 touchdowns in the win, including 2 on special teams and 1 on defense. There were no shortage of standouts for the defending Little Four co-champs. Quarterback safety Tanner Pigeon scored 3 touchdowns in the victory, 1 each on offense, defense, and special teams, while also throwing for 2 more TDs. Prescott Langer also scored 3 touchdowns, while impressive sophomore Liam Bishop scored twice, including on a 77-yard punt return. The loss for the Timberwolves was their second straight to start the season, and both of those losses have come against Little Four teams. Fort Bragg opened the season with a 28-6 loss at McKinleyville the previous week. Several other local teams were also in action last weekend. The St. Bernard's Crusaders and the Del Norte Warriors both won their games to go to 2-0. St. Bernard's made the short trip to McKinleyville to play the Panthers and handed them their first loss with a dominating performance in a 37-0 win. In their 2 games so far, the Crusaders have outscored their opponents by a combined 67-6. Senior defensive end Colton Hall had a monster game for the Crusaders and continually caused the McKinleyville offensive line problems, finishing with a remarkable 5 sacks and a forced fumble, which teammate Tyler Heinrichs returned for a touchdown. The Del Norte Warriors, meanwhile, traveled to Ashland in Oregon and comfortably got the better of the Grizzlies by a score of 42-13. The game was competitive until late in the third quarter, but the Warriors took control down the stretch with 28 unanswered points to seal the dominating win. Also in action last weekend, the Hoopa Warriors got their first win of the season at Aetna, defeating the Lions 20-6 and improving to 1-1. And rounding out a busy weekend for the HDNL schools, the Eureka Loggers were unable to sufficiently overcome some early mistakes and an 18-point first-half deficit on the way to losing to Shasta 32-24 in their home opener at the Redwood Bowl. Despite outscoring the visiting Wolves in the second half, the Loggers dropped to 1-1. Fortuna, Arcata, and South Fork all had byes last week, but all 3 of those schools will be back in action this weekend. The Cubs will finally kick off their season with a home game against Happy Camp on Friday night, while the 0-1 Arcata Tigers will have their hands full when they host the high-flying Del Norte Warriors at McKinleyville High School, also on Friday night. The Huskies, who dropped their season opener at St. Helena 2 weeks ago, will try to get their first win on Saturday night when they travel to Ukiah High School to play the Wildcats. The Wildcats are 1-1 after defeating Carlmont 55-28 in their home opener last weekend. St. Bernard's, Hoopa, and Ferndale will also be in action this weekend. The Crusaders will try to make it 3 wins in 3 games when they host Hoopa on Saturday afternoon, while the Wildcats will face a challenging matchup against a Fall River team that is 2-0 and is the number 2 ranked Division 5 team in the Northern Section. That game also takes place on Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. McKinleyville and Eureka both have byes this weekend. The Willets Wolverines will also be in action and will host Upper Lake in their home opener on Friday night. The Wolverines are 1-0 after getting the better of Piner 35-14 last week. In local college football, meanwhile, it's been a difficult start to life in the National Division for College of the Redwoods. After making the jump this past off-season from the American Division to the more competitive National Division, CR is 0-2. Last week, Redwoods lost a close game for the second straight weekend, falling 13-3 at Foothill. CR also lost its season opener 2 weeks ago, falling 16-13 to Sacramento City College. The Corsairs will try to get their first win of the season on Saturday when they return home to host Diablo Valley College at the Redwood Bowl. Kickoff is set for 3 p.m. Switching gears, it was a busy week for the HDNL boys soccer teams, with league play beginning on Wednesday, and it was a good start for Fortuna, Del Norte and Arcata. The Fortuna boys, who have been the most impressive of the local teams so far this year, opened league play with a 14-0 win at South Fork. The Huskies, who won back-to-back tournaments at McKinleyville and Upper Lake in each of the past 2 weekends, are now 10-0 overall. The Arcata Tigers also looked impressive in a 9-0 win at McKinleyville in their league opener, while Del Norte travelled to Eureka to face a Loggers team that many people believe could challenge for this year's league crown, and the Warriors came away with a statement 5-2 win. League play continues next week, while the HDNL girls will kick off the Big Four and Little Four on Tuesday. The Little Four is expected to be very competitive this fall, with all four teams showing promising signs early in the campaign, none more so than the Ferndale girls. The Wildcats won the girls Upper Lake tournament over the weekend, shutting out St. Bernard's 1-0 in their semi-final, and following that with a 2-0 win in Saturday's final over a Kelseyville team that had beaten them 3-1 in their season opener a few weeks back. Since then, the Ferndale girls have been unstoppable, winning 5 straight games, all of them shutouts. And rounding out this week's sports report, it's a big week for the Cal Poly Humboldt volleyball team. The Jacks are back on the North Coast to host the 6-team 2025 Redwood Coast Volleyball Classic, which got underway on Thursday and runs through Saturday. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Eric Galatas, Isabel Charlet, Susan Potter, and Ray Hamill. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Sigurd Bjørn. Thank you for listening.
KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commute. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org.
Redwood Community Radio is funded by Press Forward, a national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news.